From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Michelle Martin, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. By now, I'm sure you've heard the threads of this story. A woman, usually with some tie to the entertainment industry, says entertainment icon Bill Cosby lured her to a private meeting, then drugged her, and in some cases sexually assaulted her. But she said nothing, not to friends or to the police. But now she has decided to come forward. His defenders say he is being tried in the media. But his accusers say he has used his fame, power, and wealth to avoid a reckoning in court. Model and actor Beverly Johnson is one of the most recent and perhaps the most high profile to come forward. This hour, On Point, we speak with Beverly Johnson. And we also plan to talk over the ethical, legal, and cultural dimensions of this difficult story. You can join us on air or online. We'd like to know how you have reacted to the flood of accusations against Bill Cosby. Disbelief, disappointment, not sure what to think? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We're also going to take a look at the broader dimensions of this story, legal, ethical, and cultural, with a panel of people who thought a lot about these issues. And I do want to let you know that we reached out to Bill Cosby's spokesman, David Brokaw. We invited Mr. Cosby to comment or to participate in our program. Our offer was declined. Mr. Brokaw did issue the following statement, and I quote, "The media have committed journalistic malpractice. They've not checked the facts. They've been grand jury and court," unquote. Joining us now from New York is Beverly Johnson, model, actress, founder, and CEO of a line of hair and beauty products. She was the first African-American woman to appear on the cover of Vogue magazine. She has just published a story in Vanity Fair where she describes her experience with Bill Cosby in the mid-1980s, where she says that he drugged her. And for a link to her piece, go to our website, onpointradio.org. Beverly Johnson, welcome to On Point. Thanks for speaking with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
What have the last few days been like since you published your piece? I take it from one conversation that you had with another interviewer that you said you hesitated up until the very moment that you pushed the button, actually, and deciding whether you really wanted to go forward with this. So what's it been like?
Well, it's been very difficult. It's been emotionally draining for me, my family, and my friends. It's not a pretty topic. I'm not talking about fashion or beauty, so it's an unusual platform for me to take, but it's one that I felt was very necessary.
If people want the full details, they can read your piece in Vanity Fair, but the gist of it is that you say that you got a call from your agent saying that Mr. Cosby wanted to audition you for a small part on The Cosby Show, and you were eager for this opportunity. Tell us why.
Well, I was in a transition mode from model to actress, and I had done a couple of small films before that particular time. And I thought it was a wonderful opportunity. I got a call saying that I could possibly go on The Bill Cosby Show and audition for a part on The Bill Cosby Show. And I was thrilled. I was very excited and wanted to, you know, take advantage of that opportunity.
And you got to visit the set where the show was being taped, and you even got to bring your daughter, as I recall.
Yes, I visited the set, and I got a chance to meet the crew and the staff, and then had a meeting with Bill Cosby in his office, at which time I went back again to the studio and was able to bring my daughter to the set, which she was absolutely thrilled, as you can imagine. And after that, Mr. Cosby offered to have a brunch at his brownstone with my daughter. He had invited me. I said, but I have my daughter on the weekend. I couldn't possibly come over to rehearse or to talk more about my acting aspirations. And so he offered to, you know, bring my daughter along, which, again, was really a big thrill for my daughter.
And for you, I would imagine. I mean, that was a gesture of real kindness. I mean, not too many people invite people to bring their kids to their workplace, right, which is his home. But so it was then on another occasion, I take it, that this encounter that you wrote about happened.
Yes, it was a few days later, since we hadn't had a chance to rehearse and to talk about what I wanted from acting, that he offered for me to come back in a couple of days to the brownstone. And I said, sure, of course.
Was anybody else there?
Well, yes, the staff, someone from his staff did open the door. They prepared a little light meal in the same place where my daughter and I had brunch a couple of days before that. Mm-hmm. And it's a multi-level brownstone, so we went up to the living room area. And that's where we were supposed to do this rehearsing.
And he asked you to, the first thing that you found odd was that he asked you to pretend that you were drunk, right? And then you were saying that the part was, he occasionally had, models and actresses portray pregnant women, because on the Cosby Show, he was an obstetrician, portray pregnant women. You remember, you wrote in your piece that you thought that was a little odd, because you don't remember any pregnant drunk women on the show, but then you decided to go with it. How did the audition go? Okay, or?
Well, as I started to, get in the mindset of acting like I was drunk, Bill was over at this espresso cappuccino, this huge contraption that he had on his bar, and was making a cappuccino and offered me a cappuccino, at which time I said, I don't drink coffee and it keeps me up at night, and I declined. And he said, please, it's going to be the best cappuccino you've ever tasted. And he kept insisting, and who was I to argue with Mr. Cosby about a cappuccino? And so he gave me the cappuccino.
So when did you realize something was wrong?
Well, I took a sip, and for me, I immediately felt something strange in my head. And I proceeded to take another sip, and at that moment, the room began to spin. I became very woozy. My speech slurred, and I realized that I had been drugged.
How did you know you had been drugged?
Well, the room was spinning around. I was, unsteady on my feet. It was a feeling that I've never had before. And I had just taken a sip from this cappuccino. And I just surmised, as anyone would, that it came from the cappuccino. And it kept coming on stronger and stronger and stronger. It was very, very powerful.
You said in your piece that then your survival instinct kicked in and you started using an epithet toward him, which we're not going to use here, but it's a common epithet that you hear, and you said that you kept repeating this to him, over and over again. And why do you think you did that? What do you think you were hoping would happen?
Well, after I, realized I had been drugged, and Cosby motioned for me to come over towards him as if the scene was to begin, he put his hands on my waist. I was steadying myself. I was really unsteadying. And I just looked him right in the eye and just, questioned him as to why he had did this. I just wanted him to know that I knew he had drugged me. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that I could get out was this word. I don't swear normally. Mm-hmm. I couldn't put together a sentence. And that was the only thing I could do. And as I was saying the word, the drug was coming on stronger and stronger. And I kept saying it louder and louder, and so he decided that the best thing I would imagine was to get me out of there, and so that's exactly what he did.
And you described him putting you in a cab, and as I said, that the full details are in your Vanity Fair piece, which is posted on our website. People can read the entire piece if they would like to. Now, then you say that you got home and that you slept for what, hours, days? And then you eventually you decided after a couple of days that you wanted to call him back and to do what? To get some accountability? To what? To confirm that this had happened? What do you think you were aiming for? You didn't reach him, by the way, but what do you think you were aiming for?
I woke up and, you know, I was numb. I was very disappointed. I most certainly had to sleep a lot that day from the drug. And then I had to go back to work. I was had an audition in Los Angeles, and I went to Los Angeles. I think it was maybe a week or maybe even, you know, 10 days later. Needless to say, this was, you know, on the forefront in my mind, what had happened to me. And I decided, I think, from that plane ride, that once I got to Los Angeles, that I would call him. I would call him on the carpet. I would confront him.
Hmm. And you weren't able to do that because why? When you called the house, you described
when
it.
Yes, I had the number that he had given me, and I called that number, and expecting to hear Bill Cosby pick up the phone, but Camille picked up the phone.
Mrs. Cosby picked up the phone. Yes,
Mrs. Cosby.
And what did she say?
And I had not met her since before then. I said who I was. This is Beverly Johnson calling, and she recognized my name. Oh, Beverly. And I said, may I speak to Bill? And she said, Beverly, you know, it's quite late. It's 11 o'clock, and we're in bed. I said, oh, I'm in Los Angeles. I lost track of the time. I apologize. She said, no, that's okay. And I just told her, you know, just tell Bill I will be calling back.
This is On Point. I'm Michelle Martin, in for Tom Ashbrook. We are looking at the flood of accusations against actor and comedian Bill Cosby. They could be the ugly capstone to a long and what has been glorious career. You can join the conversation. We'd like to know how you're reacting to this story and how you think this matter should be handled in the public domain. Should these issues be aired publicly? Is this unfair to Mr. Cosby as his wife, his publicist claim, or has his fame and stature created an unfair advantage in getting this issue a proper hearing in the past? We have a couple of more minutes with Beverly Johnson. She is the supermodel, the actress and businesswoman who is the latest in almost two dozen women who have made accusations against Bill Cosby. She's described her experience in detail, what she says is her experience in detail, in Vanity Fair in a piece that was published on December 11th. And you can read that piece in its entirety on our website. And I do want to say once again that we reached out to Mr. Cosby through his representative, David Brokaw. He declined to join us, but was critical of the media for airing these accusations, saying that the media has committed journalistic malpractice. Also, recently, just last night, Camille Cosby, Mrs. Cosby, issued a statement, a four-paragraph statement, where she says that she compares the story of the accusations to the article in Rolling Stone concerning allegations of rape at the University of Virginia. And she says that the story was heartbreaking, but ultimately appears to be proved to be untrue, quoting her now. Also quoting her, she says, many in the media were quick to link that story to stories about my husband until that story unwound. None of us will ever want to be in the position of attacking a victim, but the question should be asked, who is the victim? Unquote. Once again, quoting from a statement by issued under the name of Camille Cosby by Mr. Cosby's longtime spokesperson, David Brokaw. Last evening. So, Beverly Johnson, just a couple of more questions for you, and thank you for joining us. What do you make of the response of the Cosby team to all this? And I do want to mention, Mr. Brokaw had no specific comment about your piece in Vanity Fair or your comments so far. What do you make of how his team has responded to these recent stories that have come out where people have talked about stories like yours?
Well, for me, this is a bigger issue. It's an issue about violence upon women and therefore being silenced. That's why I felt it was very necessary for me to come out and tell my story. I just feel that from the people that I've spoken to in Hollywood, the powers that be, have known about this for a long time, and no one's come forward. And also, this is indicative of of women that have been abused. I received a email from a judge who said, how many cases come before him, and how he has to dismiss these cases because the victim fails to show up. This is not easy. I know it's not easy for me, and I wasn't raped, so I can just only imagine someone going through something as traumatic as rape and not and keeping it to themselves.
Did you
and
tell anyone?
That's what happens.
Did you tell anyone?
No, I didn't tell anyone.
Not even your mother? I know you're close to your mother. I know when we spoke about the commemoration of the anniversary of your Vogue cover, I know that she was with you, and you're close to her, and you have a lot of other friends in the business. You never said this to anybody, and why do you think you didn't?
I think it's the norm not to say anything from what I know about sexual abuse. I sit on a board of Barbara Sinatra's Center for Sexually Abused Children, and I do a self-esteem class there. It's the norm not to tell, even as an adult woman, not to tell, the shame in it. So, no, I did not.
You also mentioned in your piece the racial aspects of this that I was interested in. Tell me a little bit about
that. It's a very difficult time right now. We're having this discussion about race and black men, a much needed discussion. And then this whole thing with Bill Cosby has come up. And, for myself, I was very conflicted as to whether to, speak out, particularly at this particular moment in time.
But tell me why. Why specifically?
Because he's a black man. So I had to separate, the Trayvon Martins, the Michael Browns, my brother, my father. I had to separate them from, what happened to me, and, we're talking about, black males in America and the disadvantage that they have in the way of being racially profiled. And we're not talking about that right now. We're talking about a very powerful man in the entertainment industry that did something to me. I only can speak for myself. I know that I wanted to stand in solidarity with these women. And hear my story, which was eerily similar to theirs.
Do you feel that you are believed? I just wanted to play a short clip just in a couple of minutes that we have left, that you appeared on the ABC program, The View, a discussion program, all women, and Whoopi Goldberg is one of the hosts, a fellow comedian, like Bill Cosby, and talked to you a lot about the details of the night that you describe in your Vanity Fair piece. This is just a short clip of that conversation. Here it is.
Beverly, it's a question that I want to ask you. So he's taken you downstairs. He puts you in the cab. You ask the cab guy if you've just called Bill. Was it such a feeling, the drugs, that you weren't worried about what it might be?
Mm. What do you mean?
The drugs. You weren't worried the type of drugs it might be.
If you know that you've been drugged, were you worried about what you might have ingested?
I'm not sure how you interpret that, but I interpret that as skepticism about what you recounted. Is that how you read that?
No, I read it asking a question and... I think when you're getting ready to become unconscious, I think that's not one of the checklists you go down, whether what was it, or I mean, you're drugged. I ask myself, this was not very easy for me. I ask myself, what am I afraid of? I understand what I was afraid of 30 years ago. Bill Cosby, what he stood for in America, feeling that it was only me that he did this to. I understand that then, but I asked myself, what am I afraid of now? And I realized that I was afraid of what other people's opinion of me would be. And that's not who I am or worry about. So I decided that I would do what I thought was best, what my conscience told me to do. And it's not easy doing the right thing sometimes. It's just really not easy.
One final question. We only have about a minute left before we lose our line. And thank you again for coming on and talking with us. As you've told us a number of times, this is not easy. What do you want to happen now? What do you think should happen now?
I think should happen is that this platform and this lightning rod this conversation should go on. I mean, one out of every five women are sexually assaulted in this country. And I told myself exactly what I would tell my daughter if anything happened to her like this, to speak up and to speak out and to speak loudly. That's what I hope will happen.
Beverly Johnson is founder and CEO of Beverly Johnson Luxurious Lifestyle Brand. She's an actor and a model. She was the first African-American woman on the cover of Vogue magazine, and she's with us from New York. Beverly Johnson, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Joining us now in the studio is Renee Graham, culture critic and op-ed contributor to the Boston Globe. Renee, good to have you with us. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Michelle.
From Washington, D.C., I'm joined by Deborah Katz, a partner at the law firm of Katz, Marshall & Banks. She has 30 years of experience in sexual harassment cases. Deborah Katz, thank you so much for joining us as well. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us in our Washington, D.C. studios with Deborah Katz is Jack Marshall. He's president and founder of the ethics training and consulting firm Pro Ethics. His daily blog on ethics issues is called ethicsalarms.com. Jack, welcome to On Point. Thank you as well.
Thank you, Michelle. Great to see you again.
And I do want to mention again that we called Mr. Cosby's longtime spokesman, David Brokaw. We invited him to make Mr. Cosby available on the program or to comment in some way. He declined our invitation but issued a statement accusing us in the media of, quote unquote, journalistic malpractice for airing charges that he says are unsubstantiated. You know, with that being said, Deborah Katz, I wanted to go back, given your experience in these kinds of cases, and ask you about Beverly Johnson's story and the way she recounted it. The question that many people are raising, in fact, even, you know, callers are now emailing us and with questions about this, say, why did it take so long for her to come forward?
Well, her story to me sounds quite credible. There is a commonality in all of these women's stories that paint Bill Cosby as someone who was predatory. He targeted people who looked up to him, who he dangled the promise of career advancement, and then he abused that power and authority over them in very violent and very sick ways. And the fact that women were not willing to come forward for many, many years makes sense. They were very young. They were trying to progress in their careers, and they thought that they would not be believed, which is a very common scenario. The fact that you have a core group of women now who have come forward makes it more safe for other women who've experienced the same thing to come forward. And I think we're at two dozen now. It would not surprise me to see us at three dozen by the end of next week.
I'm going to ask all of you to stand by on this question, but I do want to get Jack Marshall in the conversation because the question of ethics has been raised on both sides of this. As I mentioned, that David Brokaw says that our statement is that the media have committed journalistic malpractice. They've not checked the facts. They've been grand jury and court. They're just not checking this stuff out. This is a comment that Mr. Cosby has made himself. I mean, there was this rather tense exchange. In fact, we can play it. A tense exchange that he had with a reporter for the Associated Press in November. Where he was thought he wanted to talk about the art exhibit that he and his wife have donated works to at a museum in Washington, D.C., and that he was quite unhappy with these questions, and he had this to say about that.
Can I ask you if, with the persona that people know about Bill Cosby, should they believe anything differently about what?
There is no comment about that.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I think you were told, I don't want to compromise your integrity, but I don't talk about it.
You hear Jack Marshall that he's made this a question. He and his representatives have said this is a question of the integrity of the people asking. I'd like to ask you about that.
The media engaged in malpractice when it didn't follow this up when it first came to light in 2005. You can almost hear the AP reporter's trembling voice to even ask the question. I mean, the media backed off of this because they were afraid of Bill Cosby. And the real ethical failure of the entire journalistic establishment is not going after this. I mean, a biography just came out of Bill Cosby that doesn't even mention it. This is, you know, the public has a right to know what its icons and what its moral exemplars are really like. This issue was sitting out there when the stand-up comic who sort of launched all of this by making a joke about Bill Cosby and rape, he was shocked that anyone was surprised by it. I mean, he said, "I thought everybody knew this. Google Bill Cosby and rape." It was right out there, and the journalists ignored it. And
do you say? Forgive me. You say that people have a right to know what their icons are up to. Well, the argument that, as I understand it, that Mark Whitaker, who recently wrote this expansive biography of Bill Cosby, said, and in not addressing these, is that there had never been a legal proceeding that had been public. There has been a private legal settlement in a matter which is very often a closed issue. Often both parties agree not to discuss those things as a matter of that settlement. That there's never been a matter that's been publicly adjudicated in a court of law. And that's why they say. So why do you feel that there was an ethical lapse in not pursuing these issues?
You go talk to the women. You investigate them yourself. This is how the UVA story was disproved because someone went out and actually did the digging. I mean, this is the industry, Hollywood's industry, power brokers, and the news media and the celebrity media all basically lined up to protect Mr. Cosby in this situation. And we need to know who these people are that are representing to us. He's not just an icon. He's not just a typical star. He's someone who stands for values. Family values, values in the black community and elsewhere, and therefore integrity is core to this. And so the public has a right to know. And this is when the media simply lays down and basically lets a powerful figure dictate how far they can go. This is unfair to the victims. This is unfair to the public, and it's unprofessional conduct by the journalists.
Let's bring Renee Graham into the conversation. She's a culture critic and op-ed contributor to the Boston Globe. Renee, what is your perspective on this? I'd also like to hear from you just who Bill Cosby is for people who don't kind of understand where he sits in the entertainment, you know, firmament. How big a star is he?
He's as big a star in the entertainment firmament as you can possibly have. He's been a public figure for 50 years. You can go back to I Spy in 1965, and what a landmark show that was because of the kind of character he played. He was suave. He was elegant. He was intelligent. He wasn't shucking his jiving his way across the TV screen, and that meant a lot to a lot of black people. I think it was also important for white America to see a black man portrayed that way. So Bill Cosby has always had this sort of bigger-than-life position in the American firmament, and I think that's part of what people are reacting to. It wasn't just I Spy. It was then Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids. It was the Cosby Show. It was his stand-up specials. It was the way he presented himself, as Jack mentioned, as this paragon of family values.
How do you react to Jack Marshall's contention that the ethical failure here was a failure to investigate? That if there has been any ethical failure here, it's been the failure to investigate this earlier. How do you respond to that?
I think he's definitely got a point. I think a lot of people didn't want to look at these issues, they didn't want to think about the fact that a man who was all but anointed America's dad could also be a serial rapist. You know, those two things just don't go together, and that's why this story has been so big. It's not just that these things happened and some celebrity might have been responsible for them. The fact is that it's Bill Cosby. You know, this was the last person anyone would have thought this would occur to. So, yeah, I think that has a lot to do with it.
This is On Point. I'm Michelle Martin, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about Bill Cosby and the large and growing number of women who say that over the course of several decades, he drugged them without their consent and in some cases sexually abused them. Earlier, we heard from one of the most high profile of these women, Beverly Johnson, the supermodel, the first African-American woman to appear on the cover of Vogue. You can join the conversation. We'd like to ask you if Bill Cosby's been a hero to you and what is the right response to a story like this and what should happen next. My guests are Renee Graham, culture critic and op-ed contributor to the Boston Globe, Deborah Katz, a partner at the law firm of Katz, Marshall & Banks, and Jack Marshall, president and founder of the ethics training and consulting firm Pro Ethics. Before we took our break, Renee Graham was telling us about just what a big star Bill Cosby has been over the course of half a century. I just want to play a short clip from The Cosby Show, just giving you just an example of what it is that people found so profound and important and why they had such a strong identification with him. This is a scene where I think that many people have perhaps even seared into their memory, where the kid who plays Theo, Cliff Huxtable's son on the show, tries to explain away his bad grades by telling his father that he's only planning to be a regular person and that they should love and accept him as he is. And here's Bill Cosby as Dr. Huxtable responding.
Theo, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. No wonder you get D's and everything. Now, you are afraid to try because you're afraid that your brain is going to explode and it's going to ooze out of your ears. Now, I'm telling you, you are going to try as hard as you can. And you're going to do it because I said so. I am your father. I brought you in this world and I'll take you out.
Why do people love the show so much, Renee Graham? Just very briefly.
It was, at its essence, this sort of beautiful portrayal of this family, you know, this nuclear family, mother, father, successful, you know, the kids had their difficulties, but they weren't bad children. And it was something, if you could either relate to it or it was aspirational, you could either look at the Cosbys or the Huxtables really and say, my family can be like that, or I would love to have a family like that. And I think that was a big appeal. And the fact that it was so closely tied to Bill Cosby and the fact that he'd had this long-term, you know, loving marriage that we thought, and he had these five children. We related to all of that. It was part of his stand-up, and he took that right into The Cosby Show, and he sold it perfectly, and people loved it.
As briefly as you can, though, how do you think race plays into it? So does race play into this at all? I mean, Beverly Johnson, in her Vanity Fair piece and in our conversation, you know, referenced a hesitation to talk about this in part because he's an African-American figure, a huge African-American cultural figure. What do you think is the relevance of that, if any?
I understand when she said that, and I found it very poignant that she said that, and I understood that. And I think there might have been some of that where people felt, well, you know, you don't want to tear down the successful black man, and what's it going to say that you're going after this black man who's done so much for America and for his quote-unquote race? I think that does play into it somewhat. And maybe Bill Cosby even cynically could play that himself in knowing that he might have been given a bit of a pass because he was so successful. He was this black man. He wasn't, you know, he was the good black. That was a big part of this as well. And I think that, sure, that played into it. But I don't think that race is what's really driving it at this point, even as much as Bill Cosby feels the need to continually scold the black press about how they should be covering the story. Race doesn't figure into this. Mm-hmm.
Let's take some calls. Trish is calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. Trish, welcome, and thank you for your patience. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Michelle. Now, I just wanted to make a quick comment, and that Mr. Cosby had the best veil ever. His best character that he ever played was his own personal life. He had a mask on all those years. You can hear every woman coming forward as it unfolds. Anyone can come up with the assumption that he is guilty. I do believe these women. I believe them without a doubt. I believe he used his position. I believe he knew he wouldn't be challenged. And I believe these women had to stay quiet just for the exact reasons that they stated. And it's not the shady character in the corner that's going to take advantage of women and do and finagle like he did. It's the priest in the church. It's the public figure, such as himself, who was so powerful.
Okay.
Yes, he did this. We believe he did this. I believe he did this. Thank you.
Let's hear another perspective. I think Oscar is it Sandown, New Hampshire?
Yes.
Oscar, thank you for joining us. Thank you for your patience as well. What's your take on this?
Well, my take on this is whether he did it or not, this is not the forum to be discussing it. He is at a total disadvantage, just like any other male is in when they're accused of doing anything of this type of nature. And like I was telling the person.
How so? Give me an example. Tell me what you mean by that. He's at a total disadvantage in what sense?
Oh, okay. Well, I can give you a personal reference right now. I'm going through some hassles with my sister, and we're going or the death my parents have died, and now they're writing in it. They don't want to meet with me. I have three older sisters, and they're telling me now they don't want to meet with me because they're afraid of me. I've never done anything, but now all of a sudden it's just too convenient for a woman to say that she's afraid. When a man gets in a fight with another man and there's altercation, they're either one of them afraid to go to the cops. So, I mean, you know, and I was also telling the other person is, you know, you should give people the same time. I mean,
I see your point. You're saying that you feel that men are at a disadvantage in these he said, she said situations. That's your take on it, based on that you feel women are more likely to be believed. Is that your experience? That's what you
feel?
That's what you feel?
What I'm trying to say is, there's so many things, a man-woman issue here. Child custody, it's automatically assumed that the woman's going to get it. I mean, it's just too easy for a woman to say, and whether it's true or not, what she's saying, 20 years later, that, you know, this happened.
Okay.
Something happens, you have to report it. And if you don't report it, tough luck. You shouldn't be given the right to start saying on air across the whole world that this guy did it. And by you people letting them do this, it's an injustice.
Okay. Thank you for your perspective. We appreciate it. Let's hear some more perspectives. Buddy is calling from Augusta, Georgia.
Hey, Michelle. This is Buddy.
Okay. Great
to hear your voice again.
Yes, likewise. Thank you for going. What's on your mind? What's your perspective on this?
Yeah, I feel that if Mr. Cosby violated one person, he should be held accountable. Okay? Anything that shows that he has basically abused, violated, crossed the line, he should be held accountable for that. But the fact that multiple people can say the same thing doesn't really mean that all of that is credible. So my point is, anyone who sexually abused someone, physically abused, or whatever, need to be held accountable to the fullest extent of the law. The other thing I feel like, the media has not done their research, that it is too easy in today's era for folks to basically be given a perspective, and it's repeated over and over and over. We've seen that at the marching and the drumbeat of war and everything else. So reporters who are reporters need to do their research.
What would that look like, though? I mean, the fact is that there are some almost two dozen women now who, many of whom have given their full names and given specific details of this, and there was a legal settlement in which, you know, nine women were prepared to come forward to testify, and that this was handled as a civil matter, which is to say between two parties, in which apparently there was a settlement, as opposed to a criminal matter, which involves, you know, the criminal justice system.
Don't know what happened, but have the dates and the locations been verified? That's one simple matter of it. There are many ways to ascertain the validity of something without saying the person is a liar. You see what I'm saying?
I do.
So if Mr. Cosby has done this, he needs to be held accountable. The other thing of it, look at the context of women's histories within America, of celebrities, entertainers, all of that culture where women were not validated, where women were abused, where women were taken advantage of because of that hierarchy and the disconnect.
All right, buddy, you've given us a lot to talk about here, so let's let some of our panelists address some of these issues that you have raised. So, Deborah, let's hear what you have to say about this. I mean, I think we're hearing interesting. I'm getting a lot of calls and a lot of emails from people on our various kind of means of communicating where people are very divided on this. I mean, some are saying that they have personal experiences with abuse in their own lives where they have found it very difficult to come forward. And others are saying, I need more proof, and they don't feel that it's fair that we're even discussing this publicly. So what's your perspective on this, Deborah?
Michelle, I think you had exactly the right point. There was a civil suit. If Bill Cosby wanted his day in court, if he wanted to clear his name, if he wanted to vindicate himself, he could have gone to trial. He chose to settle that case. You had women who gave their names, who were prepared to testify under oath about the abuse that they suffered. And I think it's completely disingenuous for Cosby's PR folks and PR machine to be accusing the the press to be engaged in journalistic malpractice by giving voice to these women who are prepared to use their names, come forward, describe in detail what occurred to them. And he had an opportunity, if he wished to do so, to have this completely aired in court.
What about people who say that, in fact, we've gotten a number of calls along this line, and I do want to mention we've had calls from people with all different perspectives here. Many people just called to say that they wanted to let Beverly Johnson know that they support her and the other women who've come forward because they feel that this is very hard and that they feel that this is brave. But others have said, for example, one caller from Columbia, South Carolina, Betty, is saying that the women should have come forward when all this happened, and now they just need to let it lie. If they chose not to speak up then, she thinks it's too late. And what's your perspective on this? I'd like to hear from each of you on this. Deborah, I'll ask you this first.
Well, I obviously disagree with that. I think it takes a lot of bravery for women to come forward. The fact that women are prepared to do so, I think, is a brave act. And this is obviously newsworthy for the reasons that this is an icon. This is someone who has built a career on burnishing an image of himself as Mr. America, everyone's dad. And this seems to be completely a false image, and he has hurt a lot of people. And the fact that we are now willing to have a robust discussion about it is very important.
Renee, what about this? Is this newsworthy? A number of people have questioned whether this is newsworthy. They say these events were long ago, and they are not worthy of discussion at this moment.
You know, I don't remember these sorts of discussions when we were in the midst of the pre-sex abuse scandal. And people weren't saying to victims who had come forward 20 to 30 years later, well, why didn't you say something about it then? Why are you talking about it now? You should just let it go. I think the issue is much bigger than that. And I think the fact that a lot of these women are being faced with the notion that they're not being believed speaks directly to why they probably didn't come forward 30, 40 years ago. You know.
But others make the point that celebrities are, because they are wealthy or anyone with means, is sometimes the subject of false claims for the purpose of getting money. That is an argument that has been made, and I think it's kind of implied in some of the critiques of the accusers.
Right. That's something to that. But are these women filing suits against Bill Cosby? Are they lining up for money? They're setting themselves up for public ridicule and all kinds of criticism. And for what? They need to tell their story.
And why is this newsworthy? Just answer this basic question. Why is this newsworthy?
It's newsworthy because it's Bill Cosby. You know, I think it would be newsworthy if we were talking about the president of a university or if we were talking about a parish priest, which we have had those conversations. When you've got someone of note who has possibly been involved in decades of criminal activity, that's news.
Jack Marshall, I want to go back to you on this because you raised this question as well. And I'd like to ask you, as I said, the question of ethics has been central to this. It's been raised on both sides that Mr. Cosby's defenders have argued that it's unethical to raise this in this view. I'd like to ask, what is our role in this as consumers of media, as people who watch the program? I mean, the program, the Cosby Show is still available on some of the channels that show reruns. Many people still find it, a very big part of their viewing experience. We note that a number of tour dates of his stand-up tour have been canceled. But do we have some role as consumers here? Many people say that he has not been found guilty in a court of law. Therefore, he is under our system. He is an innocent man. Other people say that by continuing to participate in his public events, that you're validating him. What's our ethical responsibility here?
Everybody has to make that decision themselves. I mean, the statement that he's innocent until proven guilty is misapplied in this case. I mean, that is a standard. That's a standard used in court. It has nothing to do with public opinion. It has nothing to do with your decision to decide that your neighbor is a thief if you see him robbing your car. I mean, the fact is we can make our decisions on the facts that we know. The other statement that's made all the time, and then we just heard it some, is it's easy to go after these celebrities. Bill Cosby is the proof that that's not true. It's not easy to go after Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby has incredible power. The fact that these women were terrified, in Hollywood, you're never going to work in this town again means something. And he had the power to make that stick. So the people who are making connections of that to their own lives are basically not looking at this in the other person's shoes. And the other thing that I think is key to realize why this is happening and why we see the resistance is that America needs heroes. All America needs heroes, and Bill Cosby was a hero. He was a hero. He represented core values, especially to the black community, which is why we are seeing people like Whoopi Goldberg and Don Lemon finding themselves sort of attacking these women. Don Lemon was basically challenging a woman who said she was raped about how well she fought back and did she consider all these strategies. I mean, this is because it is so painful when a hero who sets himself up as someone who conveys values to the public then betrays that trust in the way that Bill Cosby has. So this is a major issue. That's why it's newsworthy, and that's why we have to try to get by the biases and get and stop enabling, which is what a lot of the media has been doing.
I do want to mention that we received a number of calls and messages from people who had personal experiences with abuse, and we want to thank all of them for being willing to share those stories. We know that, you know, notwithstanding whatever the facts are with Bill Cosby, it cannot be easy to want to speak about these issues in your own personal life, and we thank you for making the effort to call. So thank you for that. It's been an important conversation, and I think the story will continue. And we thank all of our guests. Renee Graham is a culture critic and op-ed contributor to the Boston Globe. Renee, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Michelle.
Deborah Katz is a partner at the law firm of Katz, Marshall & Banks. Debbie, thank you as well.
Thank you for having me.
And Jack Marshall is president and founder of the ethics training and consulting firm Pro Ethics. Jack, thank you so much for being on the program as well.
Thank you, Michelle.
I'm Michelle Martin, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.